your girly to the movies. Last night, the preview of Brian De Palma's new film Blowout drew thousands of Philadelphians to 16th and Chestnut Streets. The fans outside the theater screamed when they saw John Travolta and Nancy Allen. The viewers inside the theater screamed when they saw themselves on the screen. Blowout was shot in Philadelphia. You'll recognize the locations like Penn's Landing, Wanamaker's, the Wissahickon Drive, and you may recognize the faces of the many Philadelphians who were cast for small parts or as extras. For a lot of the Philadelphians who were cast, last night was the moment of truth when they learned how much of their bit was on the screen and how much was left on the cutting room floor. Since the city of Philadelphia is a movie star today, we're going to spend the last 2 hours of fresh air talking about films. All film directors have long stories to tell about complicated dolly shots that had to be done and redone, and in the interim gave the whole crew a big headache. Garrett Brown's invention, the Steadicam, has made many of those dolly shots and headaches unnecessary. The Steadicam can be strapped to the cameraman's body, so it can travel anywhere that the cameraman can, around corners, through hallways, upstairs. Garrett Brown has trained many cameramen to use it, but his own camera work has been very much in demand. He's done shoots for Rocky, Altered States, Endless Love, Stripes. He did most of the shooting for The Shining, and did the point-of-view shot in Blowout when the car careens off the Wissahickon Drive into the creek. Today at 4 o'clock, we'll rebroadcast my interview with him about his experiences working on a variety of films. Part of Robert Rothbard's job was acting as a middleman between the film crew and the city for Philadelphia during the location shooting in Philadelphia, and he'll be with us at about 3:30. Joanna Oberman runs a Philadelphia talent agency called The Talent Store. 7 months after she opened the shop, she was contracted by Brian De Palma to do the principal Philadelphia casting for Blowout. She'll describe the roles that she had to fill and how she cast them at about 3:30. In the film Blowout, John Travolta plays a sound man who records sound for films. Today at about 3, we'll hear a documentary about three of the current top film sound designers: Walter Murch, who did sound for Apocalypse Now; Alan Splett, who did the sound for The Black Stallion, and Ben Burtt, he did the sound for Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. With me now for the first hour of today's show is Johnny Cunningham, who's generally considered to be one of the best fiddlers currently playing traditional music of the British Isles. Cunningham is from Edinburgh, Scotland. He started playing at the age of 7. He was 14 when he helped form the traditional Scottish band Silly Wizard, which in the past few years has become very popular in this country. His brother Phil is an accordionist and pianist who also plays with Silly Wizard and has recorded an award-winning duet album with Johnny called Against the Storm, which, like Silly Wizard's albums, is on the Shaughnessy label in America. Johnny recently left Silly Wizard and has been living in rural Pennsylvania. He'll be performing at the Philadelphia Folk Festival in August. Tonight you can hear him play at Penn's Landing in Philadelphia. He'll be performing at 8 o'clock. He's brought with him today his fiddle, and he'll be playing some live music for us, and we're also going to hear from his soon-to-be-released record some preview music. And before we meet him, and before he plays for us live, I thought we could listen to a selection from the Silly Wizard album, which is called So Many Partings.
Thank you.
That's a selection from one of the Silly Wizard albums, and my guest is Johnny Cunningham, who was one of the founders of Silly Wizard. He left the band about a year ago, and he's been living in rural Pennsylvania. And Johnny's brought his fiddle with him, so he'll be performing for us live, and we'll be talking as well. Johnny, it's great to have you here. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks a lot. It's nice to be here.
A lot of Americans, as I'm sure you've learned, discovered traditional music, but usually I think it's discovered when people are in their teens or a little later even. Was traditional music a part of your life when you were growing up?
Yes, very, very much a part of my life. I think the music was always in the house, whether it would be other musicians dropping by the house to play, or whether it was on the radio or on the record player. Traditional music's always been a part of my life, although I never ever thought that I would be making my living from playing it.
Well, you learned to play when you were seven.
Yeah, I started to play when I was seven.
Was it a big deal in the house, or was it kind of typical for
In our household, it was typical. My mother played the piano in ceilidh bands and dance bands, and my brother, who's 2.5 years younger than me, already played mouth organ and accordion then. So I kind of took up playing later, 2 years later than he did.
I don't know what kind of neighborhood you lived in and how distant the other houses were, but did you ever have to worry about irritating the neighbors when you were young and first learning how to play?
No, never. We actually live in an area where the houses are quite close together, but our next door neighbor was a pipe major for the Lothian and Borders Police Pipe Band. So he used to, I went to sleep with the sound of the bagpipes pretty much every night, and he'd practice his pipes and Phil would practice accordion and I'd play the fiddle. The music's such a part of life there that it doesn't bother people. The television would be much more liable to annoy them if it was up loud than people playing music.
So when you were young, did you have this like conscious sense of the music being part of like your family tradition and the larger culture that you came from?
No, it was just a very ordinary thing to me. I never even found out the folk scene existed till I was about 13 years old. I didn't even know that, you know, there was such a thing.
What kind of music did you connect with, like through radio and records?
The same as anyone else, really. When we were listening to the radio, it was whatever was on popular radio at the time. Record wise, we would always listen to, I suppose, Jimmy Shand's band, country dance band, and a lot of the Shuskeen Cayley band, Irish dance music. But then when we listened to the radio and we were hearing the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and we'd go out and buy these too.
Was there a big rebellion, musical rebellion amongst young people who left traditional music for rock and roll?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think most of the younger musicians have grown up with both types of music and like both types. I don't think anybody's rebelled against anything.
Uh-huh. I was in an Irish bar a couple of years ago in which there was this little fight breaking out between the older people who were drinking and the younger people who were putting dimes into the jukebox, and they both wanted such different kinds of music. But
that'll happen anywhere.
It doesn't matter
whether it's an Irish bar or a Scottish bar or whatever.
That's absolutely true. Well, I'm sitting here looking at your fiddle, and I'd love it if you could play a tune for us.
Okay, I'll start by playing a tune that you know over here by the name Old Molly Hare. It's originally a Scottish fiddle tune, but it travelled over here and it's now played a lot by old-timey fiddle players. It's we call it the fairy dance or the fairy reel. Just check that it's in tune here. Okay. Thank you.
Sounds terrific. When you were young, did you do lots of rigorous practicing of scales and exercises to achieve that technique?
No. No, I think we used to play a lot of, just a lot with the family and with visitors. We pretty much played all the time, though. We'd play every day, sometimes for hours on end, but it was never a sit-down practice kind of thing. You learnt as you went along.
So you just played what you wanted to.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why is it that when people talk about violin, it's this really complicated instrument that is really requires rigorous practicing, and the word fiddle has such a more casual connotation to it, and, you know, fiddle's something you pick up and play. They're the same instrument.
Yeah, well, I think it's classical music requires, it's a different technique, and it requires, I think, a lot more of that kind of training, you know. Fiddle music, I think, uses everything. It uses the influences of everything round about it. So whereas classical music has its standards and its... I don't quite know how to say it. They have a set way of learning, which is learnt by every classical musician. And then they take it up step by step, step by step. But as regards a traditional musician, you play the way you feel and how you feel.
Was your tone like really different than, say, a classical musician's tone?
Yeah, we don't use as much vibrato because it kind of sounds strange with this type of music. You use a bit more on a slower tune, on a slow air. You see, the thing is, with fiddle styles, they're all totally different. That even in the one country, and if you take Ireland or Scotland, in Scotland you have the central Scotland fiddle style, you have the east coast, the west coast, then you get up to the Shetland Isles, and all these people play fiddles differently. And because it's so much, it's passed down, pardon me, from family to family, it's a very individual type thing. There's no right or wrong way to play it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the difference between traditional Irish and traditional Scottish music?
Yeah, the differences aren't really all that great, and a lot of people find it difficult to differentiate between the two. But because what happened was the interchange of people from the two countries has always been so great that the music just went along with it. But Scottish musicians, especially in fiddle playing, play with what's known as a Scottish snap, whereas the Irish players tend to have a more fluid style of play.
Can you demonstrate what the difference sounds
like?
Yeah,
okay. This is a tune... It's an Irish tune, okay, called The Star of Munster. And I'll play it, I suppose, in the Irish style, and then I'd play it the way we'd play it in Scotland. That was the way an Irishman would play it, and we'd play it with a snap. It would go.
It sounds like that would also make for different dances accompanying it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Scotland has a dance called a Strathspey, which is from the Speyside area of Scotland, and it's pretty much common only to Scotland, and that kind of rhythm is used for that dance.
Are there different harmonies in both music?
Yeah, I think it depends on who's playing or what combinations of instruments are playing, but there's no real set way. There's the ground lines which everybody seems to follow, but because the tradition is an ever-growing and an ever-moving thing, then you have to put your personal stamp on it. You use the accumulated knowledge of centuries, and then you do what you want with it to further the tradition.
You've been living in Pennsylvania, and I know that you sit in with country and western bands, and the style of country and western fiddling is really different than traditional music. Is it like speaking a different language? Do you have to play
The feeling's the same, the emotion's the same, which is what it all comes down to in the end. I find the same emotions in country and western as I do in Scottish ballads, and in blues music too. It's a kind of way of saying, look how horrible my life is, but I'm dealing with it romantically, you know. And so it's not so hard to get the feel of the music. The technique is harder. I'm only just beginning to learn that way.
Is there any way you could play the kind of a tone of a vibrato you'd need for country and western? And
it's pretty much the same, sort of actually, same. Believe it or not. Yeah, it has to be.
I was thinking it was being a lot more weepy, you know, because there's a.
Well, you see, there's a lot of very weepy Irish and Scottish music too, you know.
Okay, do you want to do a tune for us?
Yeah, why do I do some weepy, maybe, just to let you see. This is a. The humidity is getting to this thing. Okay. This is a tune called the Aran Boat, which is.
Pretty.
Thank you.
Real
it's,
nice.
So it's always difficult to play something like that in this kind of environment, you know.
You mean because there's no audience or no band?
No,
or?
Just because it, you know, you're sitting in a studio and it's, I think because the tune's so old and it conjures up images, you know, totally different.
You don't think this is really full of rich and mythical images? I don't know. You formed Silly Wizard when you were like 14 and a half?
Yeah, well, there was two guys, Bob Thomas and Gordon Jones, who ran the Triangle Folk Club in Edinburgh, which was one of the biggest folk clubs in Scotland at the time. And I had only just found out about the folk scene. I found out that there were all these people who were really interested in the kind of music I was playing. And I started to hang out there on a Saturday night. It was an unlicensed sort of coffee house type place. And they were interested in putting a band together. And I just happened to be in there on the beginning of it. And sort of half a year later, I left school and went on the road with the band, and it became Silly Wizard.
I really ought to ask you how you came up with the title.
Well, it's another strange thing. We used to go under a whole lot of different names. We'd just go out. We didn't really have a name for the band, so we'd play one place and we'd call ourselves one name, and one place another name, and that was a name which just stuck, and people would book us back under that name, and it grew and grew and grew. It didn't describe the music or anything we were doing, but it stuck in people's minds.
I wonder what it is that made that one stuck. What were the other names?
Oh, some of them are too rough to mention, really.
Yeah. Titles are just awful. It's nothing like a bad name. Everyone really gets embarrassed, yeah. So what are some of the pluses and minuses of going out on the road when you're 14 or 15?
I suppose I learned to grow up quickly, if I have grown up, I don't know. I found that, I was on the road pretty much 9 years with the band, and I found that I was wiped out, really, and I needed to get off the road for a while, which was one of the major reasons I left the band. I think you do an awful lot of growing up very quickly, because you see a lot of things that, good things and bad things, that a kid that age, you know, wouldn't get to see otherwise. I mean, I'd been pretty much all over Europe by the time I was 16.
Yeah, so your band started to catch on in America about 3 years ago, was that?
The first concert we did here was at the Philadelphia Folk Festival in 1979, summer of 79.
What do you think it is that makes the climate right in a country for a band to catch on? I wasn't at the Folk Festival last year, but I'm told that, you know, that Silly Wizard was the hot band at the festival.
I think the way we approached our music was just the right way for America. It seems to have been the right way for everywhere we've played, but I think the reason it went over so well here was because the language is the same. It was easier for us to communicate verbally as well as through our music, and so people really knew what we were doing and why we were doing it.
Yeah, I guess I have to wonder how it sounds in Paris and Paris, Sweden.
Well, France is about the only one of the European countries that we played that was easy to communicate that way. And because they still have very much a living tradition of their own, and they knew what we're doing. Germany is harder to play to. Germany and Holland, Sweden and Norway, these places are difficult, because they would rather hear you play something fast than hear you play something slow. Huh. They're just in it for the, you know, they want to get their rocks off.
Yeah, well, would you translate the songs for them?
No, because the kind of concert setting that we were in was more like a rock band. You know, we'd appear on stage and we'd play to thousands of people and then go away again. It wasn't a cultural thing at all. It was just people. It was as though what happened to Silly Wizard was that they ceased to become a traditional folk band, and they became a band who happened to play traditional folk music. So we were playing, I mean, we played on the same concert bills as Susie Quattro and the people from Monty Python and things like that.
Well, you know what, I wonder if this seems like an unusual, the studio seems like an unusual environment to play a very wistful song. How does it feel in a big rock setting on a large stage with thousands of people?
The thousands of people are what make the difference. You know, because you play and you get a wave back from them, and then it makes you want to play better, and the better you play, the bigger the wave gets, and it can be very exciting.
You were telling me before you like to go see a lot of movies. Did you see a lot of movies in all the countries you were touring in when you were touring?
Yeah, but unfortunately my command of foreign languages is really bad, so I used to go and just sit through these movies and not understand a word they were saying.
Your brother Phil is also a musician. Did you play together a lot when you were young?
Yes, all the time.
I'd like to play a selection from an album that you recorded together that I know won a lot of awards in Scotland.
Yeah,
for
and
Best
Ireland
Folk
and
album.
Holland. That, yes, yeah.
What are some of the things you were thinking about when you put together the album? You know, about like what kinds of, how you wanted to spotlight yourselves and what kinds of tunes you wanted to play?
Well, it's funny, for this album was a total shambles when we went in to put it together, Against the Storm, because we'd been touring really hard, and Phil and I started that album, I think, four years ago, and we only got two cuts done, and then we were so busy we never had time to go back into the studio because we'd be working on the band's projects and Silly Wizard projects. And when we went into it, we were eventually given 2 weeks to go into the studio and do Against the Storm, and we didn't know what was going to come out the other end. So we went in there and we just started playing around, and the album grew out of that, and it's been very successful. I think maybe because it was so spontaneous, it kind of caught people's imaginations.
Mm-hmm.
We called it Against the Storm because it was such a struggle getting it done, and also because there was a few things on it again which weren't considered the norm amongst the traditionalists.
What's that? There's one piece that has an obvious rock.
Oh yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And also on this piece that we're going to hear from the album, it has a synthesizer in there. But the way we look at it is that the reason that Silly Wizard and my brother and I got away with doing all these things was because we are thought of as traditional musicians, so the music's ours to do with what we want to do with. You know, nobody can say you're spoiling the music, because the music is ours anyway. You know, it, as we learned to play it, it became our music.
Right. Well, let's listen to the selection from
your
album, Against the Storm. We're going to hear Fingal's Cave. Do you want to say anything else about it?
No, this is just a really pretty well-known Scottish tune. We play it as a slow air and then a march.
Thank you. We heard a duet from the album Against the Storm, and my guest Johnny Cunningham was featured on fiddle, and his brother Phil Cunningham played accordion and piano. Every form of music, particularly traditional musics, have a whole mythology that surrounds it, right? So when you came to America, what were the expectations and the projections that people have about like who plays the music and what it means in its native land?
I think people are surprised over here when they find out that Scotland isn't some kind of, you know, living in some kind of Celtic twilight. You know, they seem to think that every bar you go into, you'll find this sort of music, you know, playing. Or they think that if you switch on the radio, that's all you're here, and that in Scotland they don't know anything else, which is it's untrue. You know, this music lives on a parallel with everything else that's going on. They expect, I know a lot of people, they've gone over to Scotland and they'll go into some bar and to seek out an old man who will sing them a 45 verse beautiful Scottish ballad, and the guy will sing them what they want to hear, and then they'll say, okay, sing your favourite song. And he'll turn around and he'll sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow or My Way, because the realisation is the people don't sing traditional music because it's cool or it's the right thing to do. They sing it because they enjoy singing it. And if they enjoy singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, they'll sing that too. They'll sing anything they like. And I think that's when people start to wonder, you know, when they go over there and they find that it's not such a sacred thing over there.
Are songs,
as it tends to become here.
Are songs that have become popular here, like, you know, When Irish Eyes Are Smiling and things like that, popular in the Isles also?
Yes, I think they're popular everywhere. You know, there's something about them which, again, it's if you're involved with the folk scene, then it's not the right thing to sing, okay. It's When Irish Eyes Are Smiling, which is a shame because it's... these tunes do the job that music should do, which is communicate.
How about Who Threw the Overalls and Mrs.
Murphy's
Chowder?
Mrs. Murphy's Chowder. I only heard that for the first time just a couple of weeks ago down at some friend's house. Bing Crosby was singing it. It was great.
What do you think of American popular culture depiction of Scottish life?
I find that very funny.
What have you seen?
Oh, it's especially commercials for... can I mention commercials in this station?
Sure.
Yeah. The commercial for the Volkswagen Rabbit, where they have a Scotsman saying that it takes so little petrol that he can travel the breadth of Scotland every day for some... without mentioning that the breadth of Scotland, from Edinburgh to Glasgow, he said, is actually, I think, 42 miles from Edinburgh to Scotland, which really isn't all that far. And it's supposed to be, you know, an economy car. So here's a Scotsman... will buy an economy car because he's tight with his money. And everyone thinks, you know, they go about in kilts and they shout Hoch and Hootsman and they're forever searching for the Loch Ness Monster.
Wearing kilts?
Wearing kilts, yeah. And they all have big red beards, even the women. You know, it's that kind of, oh, we don't have any electricity and we live in caves. It's a strange thing to watch over here.
Do you mean to tell me that's all not true?
I'm sorry. We don't even eat raisins, rice and rye.
Oh, that one I wasn't even aware of.
That's a good one. They have these three Scots guys in a boat on Loch Ness and they're going talking about raisins, rice and rye. I don't know, probably because there's a lot of R's.
So are commercials the best place to find out what the stereotypes are?
No, things like Macmillan and Wife, when they go back to find their ancient Scottish ancestry and they end up in some gloomy castle and everyone's murdering each other off, that kind of thing.
That's great. Can you do another tune for us, Johnny?
Yeah. Okay, what I'll do here, this is another tune. I've been trying to play tunes where people would maybe recognise them over here in the States. You call this tune The Devil's Dream, we call it The Deal Among the Tailors. So I'll knock this one off quick. Thank you.
sounds really good. You brought with you a preview of what's going to soon be an album. You have the master tape of an album that's coming out. How soon is it coming out?
It should be out at the end of August.
Oh, that's really soon. Well, yeah. I'm really anxious to hear what you've been doing recently. Can you tell us a little bit about the band you've put together and the concept behind it?
Yeah, the album's called Thoughts from Another World, and the first side of the album is the way I think of Scotland and Ireland and Brittany, the Celtic countries, when I'm thousands of miles away from it, and it's a kind of, I suppose, like a dreamlike listen. It's the whole first side is self-written music, and the second side deals with the crossover of the Celtic music to the United States and Canada. This finishes off the album. It's a tune called "The Crossing," which is about the immigration of the Celts to the States. And on the album with me, I had I used all American musicians. Jim Cusa from New England played hammer dulcimer, and Gerald Trimble from Kansas City played cittern, and Vinnie Mose, who plays with a Philadelphia new wave band called Fun City, he played bass and engineered the album. And then I had three members of the Johnson Brothers, a fine country rock band from this area. They played pedal steel, banjo, acoustic and electric guitars, and piano and synthesizers. I really enjoyed making the album.
Thank you.
The Crossing, and it's a selection from a soon-to-be-released album by my guest Johnny Cunningham. He wrote the piece. And Johnny, I was thinking that a lot of the musicians on there probably have never played anything quite like that, since it's a pretty unique combination of instruments and styles that you have there. Did you arrange it, or did you just talk it through?
We just talked it through. That was the weird thing was the musicians who worked on that were used to playing, you know, country music, country rock music, and it was Kurt Johnson, Wayne Johnson, and Gene Galligan. They all were just incredible, you know, as musicians, and being able to take the ideas which I gave them and then put something like that down.
Well, we're going to be hearing another selection from the soon-to-be-released album, and we'll be hearing Farther Down the Line. Do you want to just say a few words about this?
Yeah, Farther Down the Line, that was just a piece I wrote to show the closeness of American music to Scottish country dance music. And it starts off with just fiddle and piano, and then it goes into pedal steel and banjo. It shows how the music from the two countries fused together.
Before I hear that, I want to thank you a lot for coming. I've really enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you, I have too.
My guest has been Johnny Cunningham, and a little earlier he was playing fiddle for us. He's living in Pennsylvania now. He'll be going to Scotland for a few weeks soon. And he's a founder of the band Silly Wizard, although he left the band about a year ago. He'll be playing tonight at Penn's Landing. The set will be from about 8 till 8:45. And he'll also be performing at the Philadelphia Folk Festival. And you can listen for this album, which will be released at the end of August on Shanaki Records. It's called Thoughts from Another World. And then he has an album with his brother Phil. And there's also the Silly Wizard albums. And the whole bunch of them are on Shanaki. Johnny, thanks again for being here. Really
Thank
enjoyed
you.
It. And this is, again, from that soon-to-be-released album. This is Farther Down the Line. It's Johnny Cunningham, and the album that that will soon be released on is called Thoughts from Another World. That will be coming out on the Shaunakee record label in late August. And again, he'll be performing this evening at Penn's Landing at about 8 o'clock. It's 3 o'clock now, and this is Fresh Air on WUHY-FM in Philadelphia. Well, today is the official opening of the new Brian De Palma film, Blowout, and last night on 16th and Chestnut Street, apparently thousands of Philadelphians showed up to be outside of the movie, which the theater previewed so that they could watch John Travolta and Nancy Allen as they walked into the screening. Meanwhile, on the inside of the theater, there were a lot of people who were in the movie who were waiting with bated breath to see how much of their bit actually was left in the film. Because Philadelphia actually becomes a movie star with this city, because there's so many local shots that are used, so many local settings, we thought we'd devote the remainder of Fresh Air today to talking about movies. In about an hour, we'll be rebroadcasting an interview that I did with Garrett Brown. He's the inventor of the Steadicam camera, and he's done shots for lots of movies, including Blowout. He did a point-of-view shot when the car careens off the Wissahickon Drive. In about a half hour, we'll be joined by Joanna Oberman, who runs the Talent Store, and that's the casting agency that was used by Brian De Palma for all the local casting that was done. The film, Blowout, is about a sound man, played by John Travolta, who hears, while he's recording for a film that he's doing, he's recording environmental sound, he hears what he thinks is a gunshot followed by a tire blowout, and then a car just goes right off the Wissahickon Drive into the creek. At least this is the way I think the story goes. I haven't seen the film yet. So since Travolta plays a sound man, we thought that right now we'd hear a documentary on three of the current top sound designers for films. And this documentary was initially broadcast a few months ago on Fresh Air, but what a perfect occasion for it. The three people we'll be hearing from are Walter Murch, who did sound for Apocalypse Now, Alan Splett, who did sound for The Black Stallion, Ben Burtt, who did the sound for Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. And this documentary was produced by Kathy McAnally and Randy Tom.
From National Public Radio, this is NPR Journal.
If you'd come here maybe 5 years ago, this whole setup used to be a Chinese sweatshop, and it was filled with 40 or 50 Chinese ladies working on sewing machines, making dungarees. If you came here 2 years ago when we were doing Apocalypse, it was pretty much the same kind of activity. There were maybe 20 people in and around working on things that looked sort of like sewing machines, knitting together this very complicated garment, which was the sound.